Hello. This is normally the part where I talk about the one-on-one coaching that I have available. But instead, I'm going to tell you about the online course that is going to launch the first week of June. It's my first ever online course, and I put all the information that I typically share in the one-on-one coaching in the online course. So you don't have to go directly to me. You can listen and watch on your own time and build your own skills so that you can navigate the variety of challenging situations that children present for us. You can get 33% off until June 5th if you pre-order it. The link is in the show notes and in my social media bio.
Actually heard Kim talk, and man, she shattered my soul. I sat in the front in tears every day of that institute, like, Lord, put him back in. I want to do over. I want to try it again. I want to try it again. Right? So I'm like, wow, I'm teaching my son that when the world doesn't go my way, I gotta pop him. What was my son doing? He was going to school using the tools that I gave him, right? So he'd pop other kids when they wouldn't give him the toy he wanted. He'd pop them.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Right? I'm in school with other people's children 7.5 hours a day. I'd be crazy to think that I wouldn't have a hand in raising them. And here's the thing, you can intentionally teach SEL, or you can, because you're subconsciously teaching it anyway, right? How I respond or react to behaviors is teaching them how to respond and react. So they're taking it one way or the other, right? Not just the academic stuff. And they don't know that I care about them beyond what they did on this test or whether they're wearing the uniform or not, I could have the best lesson ever, the best lesson ever, and it will go right over everyone's head.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today, I have someone that I met from, well, actually, I've met her a long time ago, but saw her speak just yesterday at the conference, and she really spoke to my soul. And it was a really great keynote. And I want to bring some of that magic, some of that conversation here, because these are conversations that really need to be had. Without further ado, I'm going to let her introduce herself. Go on, doctor.
Well, hi, I am Dr. Valerie J. Parker. First, I want to say thank you for having me on. I know this has been a long time coming, but we're making this happen today. So I'm really excited. I am originally from Brooklyn, New York. Boop, 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 right? I'm always representing the place that made me. New York City public school system is what I'm a product of. So always have to represent in a positive light, especially for the educators, people that did not give up on me, right? And even the people that didn't represent the love of teaching, they still inspired me to be able to give that to students when I became a teacher myself. So always got to give love and light to both the positive and the negative. You know, that inspired who I am today. So I'm glad to
Well,
be here.
tell us who you are. I don't know. Maybe I missed it, but I don't know if you even said your name and what you do.
I
Oh,
did.
I'm sorry. I missed it. So,
I did. I said I'm Dr. Valerie J. Parker. I'll say it again for the folks in the back. I am Dr. Valerie J. Parker. I am a wife. I am a mom of a very vivacious 6-year-old. I am an assistant principal at an elementary school in Washington, D.C. currently. I am the education committee chair for the NAACP, Howard County branch in Maryland. What else do I do? I am an equity warrior for all things Black kids in underserved communities, the special education population. So I am here to champion for change for them so that they can have equitable educational opportunities. So that is who I am in a nutshell.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing who you are. I think this is a good time for you to play that clip. She played a very powerful clip during her keynote. And I think it kind of, you know what? I'm not even going to talk about it. If you can roll the clip, and then we'll talk about it afterwards.
Cool beans.
And so I will say, before we roll the clip, that there's going to be a little bit that's lost because you're not going to see some of the visual. I will kind of give you a little bit of visual picture of how it's starting. It is a teacher who is recording a student, and they are doing some work. And that is kind of the visual. There are two children sitting at a desk, and then there's a teacher recording, and this, what you're going to hear, is coming from the recording from the teacher's phone. So go ahead and play that clip. Okay, so it's two children sitting, they're doing work. Child has his hand on his head, looks kind of frustrated.
Mm-hmm. You are disturbing everyone else with your outbursts. That's what you're doing. You have a question about the sentence starters I gave you to help you out, what should you do? Just sit there and do nothing?
Now he raises his hand.
You get out of your seat and come up here for everything else, except when it has to do with your work. And you will be doing this while everyone else is at gym, if this is not done. The first one says, this year for Christmas, I am looking forward to.
You couldn't read what was on the paper. So the teacher read it for him. And so what did you kind of notice about that clip, watching that clip? What did you notice about the teacher there?
I noticed that she made a lot of assumptions about him being able to read the sentence. She made the assumption that he celebrated Christmas, right? What if he wasn't excited about Christmas and that was an emotional kind of barrier for him, you know? So her intention did not seem to be in order to help him, right? Her actions, her motivation was not to teach him anything, but it was to get revenge. She felt like what it was that he was doing was being defiant, right? And he was doing it on purpose in order to trigger her. And so she responded, or that was not a response. She reacted with this punitive measure because she knew that if she showed this video to someone, that he'd be in trouble. So she also assumed that, and it wasn't an assumption, I guess, she saw him as making the outburst because he demonstrated frustration, right? When it was her that was disrupting the entire class. So the whole thing is just honestly painful to watch.
And as someone who's on social media probably a little too much, I see these videos kind of all the time where, you know, it's teacher recording students to, it's, you know, I see it as like, that's a cry for help. When we're at the point of recording students to try to get proof of, we're trying to get proof of how bad they are and everything wrong with them, you know, it's clear that we're seeing them with negative intent as opposed to seeing the best in them, which would bring the best out of them. And, you know, I think this is kind of one, I acknowledge that this is indicative of the overall larger system of education that we grew up in, that we live in, that we're still in today. And actually, what I found out about the video, this is something I found out, is that this was something that the teacher and the parent had kind of talked about beforehand. And so the teacher was like, I'm going to show you proof of how bad your kid is because I want you to go home. I want you to go get a whooping, right? Because that's going to fix you. And so this was the teacher's perspective, right? And so in the keynote, you showed this video. And what was amazing, like you kind of asked this question to the general public and we're kind of all talking about all these things that we're noticing. And honestly, we're kind of going in on this teacher a little bit, talking about all the things that she is kind of that we see wrong with it. And then you drop a bomb on us. And what do you tell us?
That was me. This is a video that I recorded with my phone of my fourth grade student at the time. This was early in my teaching career where I had all the pedagogical knowledge from NYU. They trained me, right? I trained among the best of the best professors. I did student teaching in every setting you can think of. And they did not prepare me for school climate and culture, right? Or how I like to describe mood and lifestyle of a school, right? And so being a fairly green teacher and not really knowing how to navigate these spaces, I relied on what I knew culturally, right? I'm in Baltimore City public schools and it's 100% Black. But I know about being Black, right? So when I come into the school, this is how I saw my colleagues talking to children. This is how I saw children talking to children. This is how I saw the cafeteria staff talking to children. This is how I saw the crossing guard, right? And the secretaries and the administration and parents. This is how they talk to their kids. This is how I was talked to, right? Yeah. At home. So I relied on what it is that I knew that would, in my mind at the time, I thought would change behavior, right? Mm-hmm. Punishment would change behavior. If your mom knew that you were in here causing all this disruption, which is crazy, right? Because whose voice do you hear in the video? All the other kids are working. Yeah. The teacher, me, I was the disruption. Mm-hmm. And I knew exactly how his mom would respond. And I wanted that. I wanted that because I wanted him to get his work done. And that is the only tool that I had access to is to punish. And then when I call mom, that's the only tool that she had access to. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we have to physically harm Black bodies in order to control them. Yeah. Right? That's the only thing. And that's a generational thing. For us, that has a lot of generational context, and it's moving out of that mindset. That is the hardest thing to do, right? Even when I have my son around my parents and my son is, you know, expressing his feelings and his thoughts, and even my husband's parents, and they're real old school and they're from the South. They're like, you gonna let that boy talk to you like that? And I'm like, well, my son set his boundary. Right? I'm teaching him. No one ever taught me how to set boundaries. I had to learn how to set boundaries as an adult. I'm still learning how to set boundaries. And, you know, I don't like that. Do this instead. Right? And I'm not asking. I'm telling. And you do it in a way that is, quote unquote, respectful for what I know respect to be, which is I'm going to have everyone leave this exchange with dignity and feeling whole. Right. So my son, I'm teaching to set his boundary. And when he does set his boundary with me, right, because I'm expecting him to just do these things like come give mommy a kiss, you know, and if he says no, people get offended.
Yeah.
But me, I'm respecting his boundary. He doesn't want to be touched right now, you know. He doesn't want to kiss my aunts or my cousins or my uncles. Like, no, you respect what he said. They're internalizing that as him being rude or disrespectful, right? But seeing it differently for them is just, they're on a journey, right? Yeah. So when I explain these things, it sounds very foreign to them. So because we only have these set of tools that our generations have passed down to us. So changing that mindset is a lifelong journey. And I'm still on it, because even when my son is in a grocery store, I got that Black mama syndrome. Like, don't look at nothing. Don't ask for nothing. Don't touch them, because you ain't getting nothing. And then the other part of me is I want him to express with words his desires. I also want him to cope, right? And learn how to cope with not being able to get what you want. And know that you're going to get to the other end of those very disappointed feelings. But if I'm always like shutting him down every time he has an emotion, he's going to grow up to be a Black man who doesn't know how to regulate his emotions. And I can't have that. I cannot have that.
Yeah.
He needs life skill and that self-regulation, that ability for him to control his thoughts, his emotions, and his behavior is going to be the difference of life and death for him. That's what I truly believe.
So let me ask you about this. Kind of going back to the clip, it sounds like you kind of, that was in the beginning part of your career, as you said, and you've grown since then. So kind of in retrospect, what would you have done differently kind of in that, if you could go back to and talk to green you, to first year teacher you, what advice would you give? How would you coach yourself on how to handle the situation differently? And what would you do differently there?
You know, there's not a day that goes by, especially when I show that clip, that I don't wish I can go back and do it again. And like, I don't know where that boy is. Well, he's probably a man now. So wherever you are in this world, I am sorry. You did not deserve that. If I could go back and do it again, the first thing I would do is read that boy's body language. You can see in the clip that he had his hand on his head. His brow was wrinkled. Like, he was sighing. Like, that should have given me the signal that he's frustrated, right? He is sinking lower into the lower centers of his brain. I need to be there. He needs me. He needs something. I need to, instead of being judgmental, I need to remain curious in what that is, right? Asking the questions. And the easiest thing to do is get up. Not once did I get up from my desk and go to him and provide him any safety or any connection. I didn't do that. So that is the easiest thing to do. Get in close proximity. Put my hand on his shoulder. Breathe with me.
Yeah.
You are safe. This is tough, but you got this, man. Provide those words of encouragement that he needed to continue to persevere, right? Because once he started to struggle, all I did was beat him further down.
Yeah.
Right. So he was in that emotional state. I made sure that his state matched mine.
Yeah.
Because I was in the lower centers of my brain and I got him right down to where I was, because I wanted him in that moment to feel how frustrated I felt with him that he wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. But not understanding that he didn't have the tools. He didn't have the tools to do what I was asking him to do. But he did. And I didn't acknowledge this at the time. The expectation in my classroom is that if you have a question or you have something to share, you raise a calm, quiet thumb. Yeah. When he did get frustrated and I started getting on him, he met the expectation. You can see him hold his thumb up silently.
Yeah.
Right. And wait to be acknowledged. He did that. And I didn't acknowledge what he was doing right.
Right.
Right. The fact that you did meet the expectation. Yay for you. I made it all about me and what I wanted and nothing more. Not what that baby needed to be successful or to feel like, yo, we're in this together, man. I got you.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, and provide that support. Like, let's see, let's do it together. Right. I don't even remember actually providing a solid model. for him for that activity.
Yeah.
And the crazier thing, oh God, I can't even believe I'm admitting this. If you look at the video, you can see that I wrote on like blank paper, so a quick activity, because I was not a well-planned teacher at that point. I didn't plan my lesson the day before, right? Yes. I didn't use my planning time to plan anything. So I rushed to my desk when I got to work in the morning. I wrote this quick thing, put some lines on that thing, and made some copies, right? So yeah. I didn't buy that, okay, let me take you through how to do this, right? The solid model. Like, first, where I'm going to read this for you, then I am going to answer this, and then you are going to hear my thinking routines and how I navigated this task. Then we're going to do it together. I'm going to do some checks for understanding to make sure that you understand exactly what we're doing and answer any questions or clear up any misconceptions you might have about this. And once I am certain that you can navigate this on your own and not a second before, only then I'm going to send you off to work on this independently. And then I'm going to provide you some feedback. I didn't do none of that. I didn't do any of that. Here, take this, go sit over there and do it, is what my instructions were.
Yeah.
So I'm
thinking about this, and I'm hearing that, you know, you first started talking about kind of some of the conscious discipline skills that you could have used to support the child in this moment that they were having. The moment was the moment, and you could have been there for him in a different way. And then you're like, well, you know, the way that I even set up the whole activity was flawed to begin with, kind of doomed to fail to begin with. Because I was kind of rushing, doing things last minute. And it kind of, you know, like there's a human, there's a human right there behind that phone who is, it sounds like you're new. And was it just like you had other priorities? Was it that you had so many things to do that you were struggling to kind of get everything done? Was it that, like, oh, I still got this and I can, you know, I can do it last night. I'm just a procrastinator and, you know, time management is an executive skill that I'm working on. Like, what was the kind of root of kind of, I guess, your behavior, I guess, of kind of where all the kind of really created the situation that we saw in the video?
You named it all. It was all the things. It was like the perfect storm. I think I had like two IEP meetings that afternoon where I had to write progress reports. And at that point I was a case manager. So I was doing entire IEPs, not just certain sections of it. I think I had gotten into a fight with my boyfriend the night before, or just real nonsense, drama, and all the expectations that are put on teachers. I got to do my attendance before 9 o'clock. You know, I got lunch and recess duty, and it was all the things. And I think what I've learned along the way is when you are unplanned, and of course, time management is like my executive skill that I'm almost 40. I'm still working on my time management. I have a calendar in almost every room of my life because I struggle with that. But what I learned was that when you are unplanned, it is a recipe for disaster, right? You are not anticipating the barriers that your kids are going to face when attempting to complete a task, right? And I don't mean like your kids as a whole. I mean, like, okay, I know that this kid has an issue with blending. This kid, you know, they might not be able to understand the sentence. So they can read all the words, but did they actually comprehend what it is that they read? So like thinking about my kids as individuals, as they're attempting to do what it is that I'm asking them to do. So when you're a well-planned teacher, you're considering all of these things. And when you're not, it's just like, you're going to have behavior issues because, you know, I don't know what to do, so I'm just not going to do it. Yeah. Right. And then you're frustrated because they're not doing what you want them to do. You have kids that are off task, and it's just a perfect storm. But if I'm thinking about the needs, and not just the academic needs of my kids, but I'm thinking about the emotional needs of them. Like, I know that this kid is going to get frustrated with this assignment real quick. So what can I do to provide some scaffolds so that it's a productive struggle and not just a whole struggle bus, right, for them? Yeah. So it's considering all these things. And there was the other part, the arrogance, like, I got this, right? Again, I've been trained by the best. I got a teaching job because I had NYU on my resume, and yeah. I was duly certified, right? I can be a general educator. I can be a special educator. I was a double threat in this game, even though I was still brand new.
Yeah.
Right. I had that arrogance, like, I could put something together that'll be effective, but I wasn't thinking even culturally, like, this kid might not celebrate this holiday, or I'm in the middle of Baltimore City. I'm not considering the socioeconomic context of my students. Like, maybe Christmas is no gifts. Maybe Christmas is, yo, we have the lights on today, right? We had a meal, like, yay. So there's so many things wrong with this clip on so many levels. And even as a Black woman, like, if I'm not conscious of these things, I am going to create disconnection with my kids and learning institution. And that is the biggest regret of mine and the biggest tragedy, right, all across the country. That is the biggest tragedy, to think that Black boys can't win here, right? I can't win here because every time I'm here, I'm just always frustrated, right? They want me to do stuff that doesn't make sense to me, that I can't really connect to, right? This isn't set up for me. Why would I come here every day? When I get bigger, like in high school, why would I still choose this?
Yeah.
Why would I still choose to come here every day when all they're going to do is kick me out?
Yeah.
They're going to keep me out of the classroom. Oh, I didn't come to school in full uniform. Up, go to the office. You didn't ask those why questions. Like, maybe I couldn't get my clothes clean. These are the only clean clothes that I had. And my kids face those things every day. But I'm from Brooklyn, New York, right? I didn't see much of that. And the only experience that I had was as a student myself, right? Because the schools that I was doing my student teaching in, like, I didn't see the behind the scenes things. I just saw what I was supposed to do for kids academically, but not, like, service the human in them, right? They
you know what
taught me that.
This brings up a question I wasn't even planning on asking, but I just want to hear what your thoughts are. You talked about, like, you were just focusing on them academically, but you didn't really see the human in them. A lot of teachers feel, you know, I'm a math teacher. My job should only be to teach math. I'm an English teacher. That's my job. Like, it's not my job to do any of the social emotional stuff or to see them as a human or any, like, my job is to build their brains with information. And, you know, it's the parent's job to decide all that social emotional stuff. And their job is to show up and listen to what I say and let me fill their brains with information. Case closed. Done. What are your thoughts on that?
They'll never learn a thing from you. Not a thing. And Rita Pearson, one of my academic heroes, she would say that people don't learn from people they don't like. And it is true. And, you know, we spend more time with other people's kids than they spend with their own kids, right? I'm in school with other people's children 7.5 hours a day. I'd be crazy to think that I wouldn't have a hand in raising them. And here's the thing. You can intentionally teach SEL, or you can, because you're subconsciously teaching it anyway, right? Yeah. How I respond or react to behaviors is teaching them how to respond and react. So they're taking it one way or the other, right? Not just the academic stuff. And if they don't know that I care about them beyond what they did on this test or whether they're wearing the uniform or not, I could have the best lesson ever. The best lesson ever, and it will go right over everyone's head.
Yeah.
And then I can tell by the data too, because I'm like, man, I spent like 6 hours working on this lesson, because that day in the clip, that was a shitty lesson, right? But there were some days where I was really like feeling good about myself. Like, man, I really created this experience, just like NYU taught me, right? I created this experience for kids to learn and really grasp this concept. And then when I look at the assessment, I'm like, well, damn, like 80% of my kids failed this. It wasn't me. And again, that arrogance that it couldn't be me, but it was the fact that my kids didn't have the safety that they needed to really understand this math. They didn't have the connection that they needed from me to understand this ELA lesson, right? So that is paramount. If we don't start from the bottom, which is their very basic needs, and care about them on a human level, they're never going to learn a thing. It's impossible, right? And I wasn't thinking that these kids can't. They're not going to learn fractions when they're hungry. They're hungry for food, not fractions.
Yeah.
Right? They're starving for love and affection, not this comprehension lesson that I spent hours on. And I wish I would have spent more time thinking about how to connect with them on a human level, as opposed to like, I got 180 days to make sure you get all the things that Common Core said I have to give you by the time you leave me. Right? That was all that I care about. And don't get me wrong, I'm a people person, right? My kids love me, but I feel like it was more of a, I better be on her side of things, right? It was more of a, because my dad used to say all the time, you're going to fear me or you're going to respect me. I feel like their relationship with me was more of a survival thing for them, right?
I'm going to get,
yes, like I'm going to get close to this person so they don't bite my head off.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to do what they want, what she wants, so she don't call my mama. Right. Yeah. I don't know how they truly felt about our connections. And even though I did say, oh, you know, how's your mom? How's your brother? It was very surface.
Yeah.
It was when people feel like, oh, if you ask about somebody, somebody's life on a surface level outside of school, you have a good relationship with them. That is nonsense.
Yeah.
Who are you? Who do you want to be? Yeah. Right? What do you need from me? And sometimes they, especially fourth graders, they can't articulate that. They just know what feels good and what doesn't. Right. And I didn't give them the space to tell me what didn't feel good. It was all about me.
Well, so let me ask you this. So now you're speaking, you're saying, okay, these are all the things that I would do differently now. But you know, clearly that's not where you were at that point in the clip that we listened to. What, like, how did you, tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get from where you were then and how, where you are now?
Okay. So Baltimore City has this system where as a teacher, if you want to get a raise at the end of the year, you have to earn 12, they call them AU credits, right? So accrued units, right? And so the way that you can get 12 AUs is if you got a highly effective rating on your evaluation, right? But sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. I know there were a couple of years where I did, but there were like maybe 2 years out of 10 years I worked for Baltimore City that I didn't. So when I didn't, I would have to, the city would offer these classes that allowed you to earn credits. So I was trying to get my raise every year, no matter what my evaluation was. So I started going to these classes, and one of them was conscious discipline. Now, it was a an extremely watered down version, right? Not by certified instructors or some people. I don't even remember what their position was. I think they were like special education liaisons, but they went to these trainings and then they brought the information back and they shared it with the community, right? So I took one of the classes and I was just like, wow, my brain, whoever thought to consider why we do certain things and using your brain to help you understand, here is why when somebody honks at me in traffic, like I get triggered like that, right? And understanding the trauma responses that we have and my need for control. I don't want my kids to have fun because then I can't rope them back in and then it's going to be chaotic and I'm afraid of that, right? I didn't understand why I was doing the things I was doing. I was straight up on autopilot and I didn't understand the power of not just relations and in terms of like proximity to kids, but like, man, relationships, right? And the power of love and empathy, like what? Right? Because you can't give something that you don't have or you haven't been taught. So even though it was a very watered down version, like a light went off and I was like, I want to know more. I want to know more because I'm a phenomenal teacher academically, but yeah. Man, if I don't get this other stuff together, like I'm not as effective. Right. So then I went to the next training because they had like a part two where we went a little deeper and then they had a part three. And then I was like, wow, like mind blown. And it's not something that you can unhear. Like once you learn about your brain and, you know, you learn about your triggers and you bring these things to your consciousness, it's not like something you can like turn off. So now I'm walking around with this awareness of like, oh, okay, I'm in my emotional state. Here's what I need first, right? And being able to be that model for kids and how to maintain my composure. And here is how I handle disappointment. It's not that you can't get angry. And that's the thing. Because girls are not supposed to be mad or angry. And I was raised in an angry household, right? So even my family to this day, they still see me as this angry teen yelling and cussing and breaking things. And I was that person. And I didn't understand that about myself. So when I see that in kids, I can see it differently now. Mm. I'm like, this is what they needed. This is what I needed, right? So fast forward a couple years. So I'm learning about all the uglies is what I like to call them in the education system. Right. So the achievement gap, and I'm like, ugh, that's terrible. Teaching to the test. Ugh, it's terrible. Black boys being overrepresented in special education. Ugh, that's painful. But school to prison pipeline, that was the one that really caught my attention because you're saying that if I continue this behavior, right, that I'm contributing to Black boys being Black men in jail? Like, yikes. So it piqued my interest and it was something that I wanted to do something about. So now I'm at a different school and there was an opportunity for me to go to a conscious discipline institute. Now, it was a total accident, last minute thing. I told my principal, like, this was something that I was interested in. And he's like, well, we're sending a team in like a couple of days. Do you want to go? Actually, I don't even think he offered it to me. I think I was like, can I go? And he was like, I'll get back to you. And then he told me like 2 days before. And so then I went and heard the incomparable Kim Hughes talk. And I was just, now I had my son at this point, but I didn't realize how, even though I was making these shifts in my classroom, I hadn't made these shifts at home.
Yeah.
Right. And so my son had a lot of behavioral challenges. And what I would do is I would revert back to what I know. Right. So even though I know how to do this now, I know how to see behavior differently in my classroom. I know how to make connections with students in my classroom. I know how to exercise empathy in my classroom. wasn't doing it at home. When my son got a phone call home or he got kicked out of another daycare, I would pop him, right? And I use that fear to drive our relationship and his behavior. But once I actually heard Kim talk, and man, she shattered my soul. I sat in the front in tears every day of that institute, like, Lord, put him back in. I want to do over. I want to try it again. I want to try it again. Right? So I'm like, wow, I'm teaching my son that when the world doesn't go my way, I got to pop him. What was my son doing? He was going to school using the tools that I gave him. Mm-hmm. Right? So he'd pop other kids. When they wouldn't give him the toy he wanted, he popped them. Mm-hmm. And then they labeled him as aggressive. And I'm like, oh God, it was me. I was the reason he was doing right. these things. And some people are so, they don't put their ego aside enough to and be reflective enough to be like, my kid does that because of me. Yeah. Right? He says this because of me. So once I started to check that and check my own behavior and I stopped popping my son, that was a large part of why he stopped popping other kids, right? I started telling him, like, Joshua, I don't like it when you talk to me like that. When you make your voice match mine, then mommy will listen and help you to solve this problem, right? He started going to school with the, I don't like it when you take my toy, give it back. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's the, we are the parents. We are the very first teachers our kids have. So I realized that conscious discipline wasn't something that I can turn on and turn off. Right. It was something that had to be a lifestyle change for me. It was the climate and culture of my life that I had to change in order for the true shift in my mindset to happen.
I'm making a video about, I'm calling it like the third option. Right. Because, you know, I think a lot of times we think we have two options. One, we use the way that we're raised, or the way that, like, when something happens or we come across a child or that we have a hard time with, we feel that we have two options. One, either do it the way that we're raised, or do it the way that, you know, maybe we were taught in school, or something we've learned or taught from another teacher or principal or whatever. And so we think there's only two options. And when option, you know, when the option of, okay, the thing that I learned in school doesn't work, we revert back to, okay, well, I'm going to do it the way that I was raised, even if it's, you know, potentially harmful. And we may even know, and I know that, like, in your journey, there's a lot of, you just didn't know at the time of the impact of reaction, but sometimes we still do know and still revert back to the way that we were raised. But there's a third option. Yeah. And the third option is to say, this is the third option that is difficult to do, especially when you're in survival mode. It's really difficult to choose a third option. But the third option is like, maybe I don't have enough information. Maybe there's an opportunity for me to grow, for me to do better, for me to better understand this child. Maybe, and that's the third option, right? And then so I have to go out and I have to grow and I have to get better so that I can reach in and actually be in a position to support and help this child. And so it's just, you know, in this conversation, there's one thing that I heard the education system sounds like did right by kind of almost, because the way it was kind of pushing you into learning more, kind of almost pushing you into that third option a little bit of like, learn more, find out what, grow a little bit more. And luckily you found something that really connected with you, that you were like, oh, this is the missing piece. And I think that
is really- for all the wrong reasons. they put me to do this, and I did it for financial gain, but man, like, had I not, began this journey, I don't even know where I'd be. I don't know where my kids would be. And as educators, we're planting seeds all the time, right? So I just want to make sure that the seeds that I'm creating, the most rich soil I can around me. Now, I can't control what happens at home with my babies. I can't control what happens next door. But what I try to do on a day to day is to model this, right? To model this for teachers so that even if they're talking to kids like this, they're going to see me do it differently. Yeah. Right. And I'm hoping, because even as an administrator, my job is not to go in and should all over them. Like, you should do this and you should do that and you should do this. I don't want to. I feel like that's going to, I'm going to lose them that way.
100%.
But what I do is when I do have opportunities to have exchanges with, especially who they deem to be difficult at the time, I make sure I do it in front of my teachers.
Yeah.
Right. I make sure I do it in front of them. And I'm praying that one day they'll hear something or they'll see something and they'll be like, I'm going to add that to my toolbox.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using that. Right. And so the one thing that I will say that my teachers began doing, because they hear me doing it all the time, is saying how unsafe something is, or, oh, you did it to keep everyone safe. So now everyone in my school is using this safety language. And I'm like,
yes.
Oh, we have a long way to go. But I hear teachers in the building when I'm not, they don't know that I'm listening. They're like, I want you safe, right? You can keep us all safe by doing this. And I'm like, yeah, such a huge victory. It doesn't sound like much, but it is such a huge victory, because even if they have that simple mindset shift, that will then get kids internalizing, like, I got to keep it safe. Right. It's my job. It's my responsibility. And I'll wear it as a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Right. So we want more of that. So I'm hoping that with the modeling and even with like other family members who have young children, man, my cousins sometimes love them to death. They be reaming out their kids. And I'm like, oh, and it's hard for me to stay quiet because one, who I am, but two, I'm like, giving them the language to say, like, man, he really tried hard on that, right? And giving him some encouragement instead of like, you failed, you didn't do it again. Wait, like, way to go. And then having a sidebar conversation with my cousins, like, your you talk becomes their I talk, right? You're bad. They internalize that, like, I guess I am bad. And then it's self-fulfilling prophecy after that, right? Yeah. I'm going to do bad things because you expect me to anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Constantly being a model is important.
Well, Dr. Valerie Parker, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Can you share your social media? Because what you put up on the screen, I try to find it. And I think another Dr. Valerie Parker came up. I don't know. So could you tell us your social media? And I'm going to look it up as you tell us right now.
Absolutely. So it's AP_DR_. Actually, let me make sure I got this right.
Ooh, underscore.
Yes, it's the underscores. Okay. Scratch all that. I'm sorry about that. It's AP_DR.Parker on Instagram.
Okay. And so I see the last, Langley. Oh, you're in Langley?
Yes.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, that is you. Okay.
That is oh man, you know, I look different every time you see me.
I really do. I'm not gonna front. I looked at some of these pictures. And I was like, I don't know who this woman is. And so.
You know, right. Black women are very diverse.
Yeah. No.
And I'm gonna look.
I like it. All right. Keep posting. Keep sharing, because you have so much to share with the world. And, you know, your journey is so valuable. I wish we could talk more. I think we'll have to have another conversation at another time. Because there's another part of your presentation that I would love to talk about, but I'm glad we got to talk about this piece. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And is there any last words you want to share with the world before I hit end recording?
Yes. Yes, I am about all things Black kids, And so a lot of people will feel like, well, this isn't for me, right? If I'm not Black, right? If I'm white. And what I want to share with everyone is that the issues that we face, they're not Black issues. They are all of our issues, right? So it takes every last one of us, whether you're Black, you're white, you're Asian, you're Hispanic, it takes all of us, and all of us are essential and crucial in solving the problems that we face and to end systems of oppression. We're not trying to fix anything, right? These systems are running the way that they're designed to keep some people powerful and to keep others powerless, right? And just because someone is pro-Black doesn't mean that they're anti anything else, right? I am in the work and service of providing a voice and advocacy and making shift happen so that Black children can enjoy and not just the education system, but all systems, because they're all interconnected and interrelated, right? So that they can enjoy the freedoms and options that everyone else has liberties to.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my